Hey, everybody. Welcome into Redacted. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores. We're going to look at war breaking out in the Middle East, of course. The focus still on President Trump winning in Iowa. So in America, of course, you have the mainstream media, the liberal media melting down over this Trump victory, this colossal Trump victory in Iowa. Meanwhile, though, Biden's policies in the Middle East are driving America off a cliff. So we're going to kind of look at both of those stories tonight. We have a special guest, Colonel Douglas McGregor, is going to join us in just a moment here to talk about that.
Plus, we're going to follow up on the Ireland hate speech bill, which would mean jail time if you have an offensive meme or if you say anything the government, the authoritarian government, does not want you to have. Plus, we're going to look at war with China over Taiwan. Taiwan has voted in a new president. The mainstream media would have you think, this means they want independence. The United States is going to have to go to war over that. Is that true? We're going to bring in analyst Carl Zha over that. All that and more as Redacted starts right now.
Someone in our chat here says, do womanish Gabriel. I don't know how to say your first screen name here. Do womanish Gabriel says, do we really need all of that lead in? Yeah, we have a 30-minute pre-show that's just there for you guys to come hang out. And it's, you know,
for you to get settled.
Get settled. And so our show starts at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So you don't have to hang out for the whole pre-show. That's just there as padding. And the reason we do that is because YouTube takes about 15 minutes to send out alerts if they ever send them out. So that's why we do that larger pre-show. So people can hang out in the chat room. There's people that are here every day. I sit as I'm getting ready for the show and look in the chat room and hang out with you guys and see what you guys are talking about. So yeah, it's a place to gather up. So you don't have to be there, do womanish. You can come right at 4 p.m. Eastern time if you'd like.
And if you watch this later, we do try to remove that. But if we haven't yet, just go forward. Doesn't hurt our feelings. It's okay to scrub, or as my 7-year-old calls it, stroll. Just stroll up.
Stroll up on the screen.
Yeah, we don't cut it anymore. We haven't done that in a while. We do time stamps.
So okay. There's chapters.
We do that.
Chapters. Yeah, exactly. So if you're watching the replay of this show, you can just go to the chapter markers in the show.
Okay. I'm so aware.
Yeah. Hey, she's down with it. Hey, we've got a daily newsletter. I would love for you all to subscribe to it. It's totally free. Go to redacted.inc. It's a perfect way to kick off your morning, by the way. Like if you're waking up, having a cup of coffee, we publish it at about 7 a.m. Eastern time, depending on when it hits your inbox. So when you sign up, you'll receive a welcome email from me, Clayton, at redacted.inc, and you just need to drag it over to your inbox because it might wind up in your spam folder. Google has labeled us as dangerous, so they might put it in a junk folder and warn you about us. Hey, these guys are telling the truth. You're not allowed to read this newsletter. And we cover about 4 or 5 of the big stories of the day. We try to cover things you might have missed while you were sleeping. And you can read it in about 5 or 10 minutes. And, you know, it's a great way to start your day. Anyway, it's our way to stay connected with you because these big tech platforms love to censor us. So check it out. Go to redacted.inc, sign up for free, and you'll receive the newsletter tomorrow morning at about 7 a.m. Eastern time. So again, redacted.inc is the place to go. Is our Middle East strategy about to blow up in our faces? Do we even have a Middle East strategy at all? Our next guest just posted this on X and says, what happens in Gaza is not going to go away. It's left a permanent mark on the people of the region. They were told they too are animals. They deserve the worst, that they too deserve to be exterminated. They will not tolerate this. This is going to blow up in everyone's face. And over the past 24 hours, multiple missile strikes, massive strikes by Iran on Israeli Mossad targets in Iraq, claiming to have hit a Mossad headquarters. So shit has hit the fan, by all accounts. And the man that predicted it is here with us right now, Colonel Douglas McGregor. Colonel, welcome back to the show. I mean, you were spot on in what was about to happen here, blowing up in everyone's face. This sort of Mideast strategy by the Biden administration doesn't appear to be a strategy at all. What is your assessment over the past 24 hours of these massive strikes?
Well, I don't think it's an accident that these strikes were launched during the Iowa caucus period. I think these strikes are meaningful on multiple levels. First of all, you had very precise targeting and the use of extremely effective precise ballistic missiles that penetrated all the air defense networks that exist on our side and in Iraq, in Syria, and so forth. So they managed to get these missiles through. And if you look at the targets, one was a house that contained a Mossad agent. He happens to be Kurdish, but he's a Mossad agent working for the Israelis, and his family in that house. And as far as I know, he and his family members were vaporized. People initially tried to argue it was a strike against us. No Americans were targeted. All the targets were related to Israeli operatives, Kurdish operatives, and ISIS operatives up in Syria, who were involved in the killings, the killings of the leading figures in Lebanon by the Israelis, and the killings of Iranian troops in Syria. So this was not accidental. It was carefully planned. And remember, the Iranians had said that there will be a reckoning. We will strike back. And they did nothing for some period of time. And then suddenly, right on schedule with the caucus, you get these very precise missile strikes. On another level, they were trying to demonstrate, if you think we're a pushover, if you want to go to war with us, understand something. We can do this all over the region, particularly in Israel. And they have an enormous missile arsenal that could level Israeli cities. And they know that the next step towards escalation, which is what the Israelis are doing, and we've now escalated in support of them against Yemen, is to attack Hezbollah or precipitate a conflict with Hezbollah that allows the Israelis, with support from us, to go in and obliterate most of southern Lebanon. And they've simply said, we're going to be in a position to strike back, and it will be something that you're not prepared for. That was the message. So this is another step, I should say not a step, but we're sliding further down the mountainside into the ravine of despair and war. And there is no strategy. Our strategy in the Middle East is to do exactly what Mr. Netanyahu wants us to do. That's all. He has far more influence in Washington than Biden. And Biden has said, yes, send them. Yes, yes, yes. Remember, Biden, if you go back and look at him in the past, he had a number of red lines in Eastern Europe. He said, well, we're not going to give the Ukrainians any of our tanks. We're not going to give the Ukrainians rocket artillery. We're not going to give the Ukrainians X, Y, Z. We're not going to give them any tactical ballistic missiles. We're not going to do these things because it would mean World War III. It could mean World War III. What's he done? He's crossed all of those red lines. Mm-hmm. Now, none of it has worked, and Ukraine is finished. It's prostrate. Millions of people have left the country. The country is in abject poverty. The government is criminal in terms of its corruption and behavior. It's more oppressive than any other government in the region. And yet we continue to feed this myth that somehow or another this is a fight for freedom. It has nothing to do with it. It's all a fight to harm Russia, which hasn't worked. But no one wants to admit that. Though you go to the Middle East, one war is winding down. The new war is ramping up. And there are people who think that if we provide enough air and naval power to the Israelis and some special ops forces, that they can pretty much do whatever they want, and they can dominate the same old Arabs and Turks and Iranians that they've always dominated. Wrong. The region has changed, and it's enraged.
In Washington, of course, the argument is that it's in our strategic interest to assist Israel in this massive military way. It's in our strategic interest to do all of that. John Mearsheimer, in his book, The Israel Lobby, argues, greatly researched, that it's absolutely not in our American interest to do anything. Every time we bomb a Middle Eastern country, it comes back to bite us in the ass. 2 days ago, President Biden said at a public event, he was asked about whether or not Iran would attack us and be involved in this. And he said, I've delivered a clear message to Iran. They're not going to do anything. And 24 hours, 48 hours later, we see this. So who's running the show here? I mean, it seems to me that Biden is out to lunch. He's a puppet. He's not running anything.
Well, I think Mr. Netanyahu is ultimately in charge. And remember, he's an extraordinarily intelligent man. I think he's a bit deranged when it comes to the future of his own country and the region. But he's in charge, and his agents on the Hill are in charge. And who are these? I mean, Lindsey Graham it's bombs away. Let's let's flatten Yemen, and then let's fly on to Iran and flatten Iran. There are problems with all of these things because Iran is a far stronger, more capable, and technologically sophisticated state today than it was 30 or 40 years ago. The same thing is true for Turkey. The same thing is true for the Arab states. There is a reportedly some sort of firefight that's gone on along the border between Gaza and Egypt, between Egyptian troops and Israelis. I don't know what this means. I don't know what will happen, but the whole region is on tenterhooks. It's ready to explode. And the people in charge in many of these countries like Saudi Arabia, the Emirates, Jordan, Egypt, they don't want a war. Of course they don't want a war. But if they don't act decisively against the Israelis, their populations will remove them. That's where we're headed. We're going to start to see governments tumble because this is a regional matter, as you pointed out at the beginning. You can't say the things and then do the things that they've done without precipitating this hostility and this response. And Iran, of course, knows we've been talking about attacking them for years. So this was a message that said, don't do it. If you do it, we're prepared, we will fight, and it will be devastating. And by the way, has anybody thought about the consequences for the oil and gas industry and the distribution of energy coming out of the region, its impact on the whole globe? I haven't heard any. Do people understand that this will disrupt supply chains, that this could tank economies? And then there sit the Chinese, who absolutely want nothing to do with a war with anybody under any circumstances. And they are acutely dependent not only on the oil and gas coming out of the Persian Gulf, but on food from West Africa. What are they going to do? I think the Chinese will reluctantly join with the Russians, and they will back whomever we attack, and ultimately probably will be drawn in some fashion. So then I worry about the nuclear dimension, which a lot of people sort of dismiss out of hand. But I'm not worried about us. I'm worried about the Israelis and their readiness to use that. And that's a fear in the region. And that fear precipitates what? The development or the acquisition of nuclear capabilities by others, the Turks, the Iranians, potentially even the Saudis. So, excuse me, this thing is out of control. We have no strategy, we haven't defined our interests, and we have always been in a position to pick up the phone and call and say, stop. If you don't stop, we'll end all supplies to you immediately and withdraw all of our forces. That's not going to happen because Mr. Netanyahu really is in charge.
Oh, you're absolutely right about that. Spot on as always. The man who predicted it, Colonel Douglas McGregor, thank you as always for joining us. We really appreciate your insights.
Sure. Thank you, Clayton. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Colonel. We appreciate it.
He seems to have that cough that everybody seems to have.
Yeah, we'll let him get out. I see him. Yeah, he was like, he's got to deal with that. And then he's going to go and do another interview. So thank you, Colonel. We really appreciate that. And, that's the thing. I think he said something incredibly smart there about Iran. And if you realize the lengths to which they launched these missiles, they didn't have to launch them at such great lengths. They could have chosen to launch them from shorter range. They had that opportunity. They purposefully chose to launch them from a longer range location. And as he pointed out, it was a clear message. You can't shoot these down. You can't stop these attacks. We launched these from a further distance away, and you couldn't stop it. And now you're playing with fire.
It's an intimidation move.
Yeah, I mean, the Biden, you literally had President Biden 2 days ago. I don't know where the hell, I think he was in Iowa. He was at some sort of event or something. And he's standing there and someone says, so what about Iran? You know, are they going to attack? Are they going to attack? And he tells this woman, no. I called them. I told them, I warned them, they're not going to do anything. They're not going to do anything.
He's on that one.
48 hours later, Iran just gives you the big middle finger. They don't give a rat's ass about you. No one in Washington is running the show. They're an absolute disaster. We've got more news to get to here on your Tuesday. We're going to look at the Ireland hate speech bill, which is moving its way quickly through the government. Many pieces of it have already been put in place. Ireland is losing its mind, but this isn't just about Ireland. I mean, this is about Europe. This is about the United States, because what happens here and these putting in place of things that you can't have access to certain materials on your computer, you can't do things that might upset somebody else because that could rise to the level of hate speech. You could be arrested for it.
Even things like there are two genders.
Yeah, if you say that in Ireland, yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, that's part of it, this gender stuff. It's unbelievable.
Ireland was the first to launch self-ID where you didn't even have to pay a fee or anything to just change your birth certificate and make yourself the opposite gender with very little opposition to that. And so did that spread outside of Ireland? Yeah, it did. It did that. So we need to watch what happens in Ireland.
So we'll get to that, and we're also going to look at Taiwan's new president and what that means for our relationship with China. Does that mean that the West wants us to push further into, you know, potentially war with China? Of course, that's what the West is going to be pushing. We'll get to all of that, but first...
First, we want to tell you about our friends over at NetSuite, because if you're particularly busy, it's New Year, your business is running and booming, but you're finding yourself sort of lost in tasks that should be automated. Well, maybe it's time to look into the benefits of NetSuite, because if you use NetSuite, your business will be humming and you will no longer be falling behind. Your team's buried in manual work. You can automate things. You know, you don't have to take forever to close the books every month. If you have too many manual processes, just look into all the many things that you can automate, from your payroll to your closing the books, all of those types of things. There are 37,000 businesses which has upgraded to NetSuite by Oracle. They are the number one cloud financial system, streamlining accounting, financial management, inventory, human resources, and more. NetSuite turns 25 this year. That's 25 years of helping businesses do more with less, close their books in just a day, not weeks, drive down costs. If you're looking at your tax reportings now and your tax filings and thinking, why didn't I automate that? Do I really have to punch them all in manually? Do I have to deal with this? Well, next year you won't if you upgrade to NetSuite. So right now, download NetSuite's popular KPI checklist designed to give you consistently excellent performance, absolutely free. You just go to netsuite.com/redacted. That's netsuite.com/redacted to get your own KPI checklist. One more time, that's netsuite.com/redacted.
Dario in our chat asks, why doesn't Redacted take questions from the audience at the end of the show? That is a good question. I mean, you have to understand here where we are right now in our location. It gets very, very late at night. And so we kind of run out of steam after doing a, you know, a 90-minute show. So what we try to do is super chats and questions from the audience throughout the show. So if you have any super chats or any questions you want to throw in here, we kind of We really try to incorporate those questions during the segment that we're talking about. So if we're talking about Iran, we're talking about Ukraine, we're talking about Israel, we're talking about Taiwan, we're talking about Trump, you know, get those questions in now about that particular subject, and then it's more relevant to the conversation. So if you'd have any questions now, and we love to go back and forth with the audience here on YouTube and on Rumble. So yeah, get any questions you'd like in there. Like someone was asking, does Colonel McGregor, does he drink? Because, you know, he's Scottish.
Oh.
He's got the Scottish stuff. And actually, no, I know this personally. He does not drink at all, actually. So when he goes to Scotland, he told me his Scottish friends are like, what's wrong with you? He's like, I don't drink.
I don't like cancer.
He's an advisor. He was a former advisor to President Trump, Secretary of Defense. You know, like that's the kind of guy you want in the Pentagon, like keeping us out
Someone sober.
Someone sober and out of wars. By the way, President Trump doesn't drink either, just FYI. So anyway, just so to answer your question,
and neither
a couple
does
people.
President Biden. Right? You're the one who's told me that.
I don't know about President Biden. I don't know about that.
You told me this.
Did I tell you that?
Yeah, because remember during the debates when he debated as vice president and people said, oh, he seemed drunk? You on Fox said, he doesn't drink. I'm pretty sure he doesn't.
Okay, I'm not.
Let's circle back around on that. I think that he doesn't drink.
I don't know that. I definitely know that Trump doesn't.
Yeah.
I don't think Trump's ever had a drink in his life.
I like the idea of people with the nuclear launch codes being sober people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also to not have dementia.
Right.
So that's a problem, you know.
Yeah, the sobriety's served him well,
right.
But that doesn't bode well for dementia. Yeah. And as you know, alcohol is related to all manners of cancers. Not that Colonel McGregor is particularly, because I said cancer and risk. Everyone is when you drink, right? Okay.
But I was just answering the questions in the chat. So anyway, people curious about that, you know, get in some questions now. We'll take them throughout the show as always.
Okay. All right. Well, the media is melting down about how handily President Trump was able to win the Iowa caucus this week. And instead of trying to figure out why did he win so handily, why do so many people who could be viewers of our show, right? This is the media speaking. Instead, they're just insulting them, saying, if you voted for Trump, you're stupid. You don't live on planet Earth. Also, you're selfish and you're probably a white Christian male. And that inherently makes you selfish. It's pretty amazing. Now, I say this.
And racist.
Yes, yeah. That goes without saying. Yeah. I say this as a former card-carrying member of the liberal media, who also myself was very shocked and disappointed when Trump won in 2016. And I remember feeling like, oh, did the media give him too much time? Was it our fault as the media, right? Instead of thinking, what do these people see in him? What does he give them, right? Instead of having any humility about what other people think, you know, they're thinking, well, we know better, but these people are just too stupid. And it's infuriating to watch it. Watch Rachel Maddow say that what we are seeing here is the rise of authoritarianism. And she says it with a straight face. She means it.
And the big picture takeaway from that, and I don't mean to be, again, too dark, as you said, on this, but it is not, if we are worried about the rise of authoritarianism in this country, we are worried about potential rise of fascism in this country. We're worried about our democracy falling to an authoritarian and potentially fascist form of government. The leader who is trying to do that is part of that equation. Mm-hmm. But people wanting that
Correct.
Is a much mm-hmm. bigger part mm-hmm. of that
That's
equation.
Right.
And the American electorate is made up of two major parties. One of those parties has been flirting with extremism on the ultra-right for a very long time. They've brought them in a way that they haven't been central to Republican electoral politics ever before, and I know because I've been studying this. But once you have radicalized one major party so that those are the preferences of the people who adhere to your party, the leader is interchangeable. Mm-hmm. And yes, Trump is sometimes what we call it. Mm-hmm. MAGA movement is probably a better way to do it. But there is an authoritarian mm-hmm. movement inside yes. Republican politics that isn't being bamboozled by Trump. Mm-hmm. They are pushing Trump yeah. to get more and more
right.
extreme, because the more extreme things he says,
the more they adhere to him.
And that is coming from a very large proportion of the American right that adheres to the Republican Party. And that's why this is a Republican Party problem more than it is the problem mm-hmm. of one man and his leader.
So what a crock of shit. And
yes.
What the hell? What is she talking about? Give me specifics, Rachel Maddow. How is the Republican Party pushing Trump to be more radical, more extreme? And what does it mean to be extreme and radical? Is not allowing 10 to 15,000 people per day to pour across the southern border radical?
Well,
what is radical?
I can tell you, because I watched her almost every day during the Trump administration, and I know what she told me was wrong with Trump was Russiagate. She didn't apologize for that. Was the fact that he was going to steal the 2020 election and that he would not leave office peacefully. None of those things ended up being true, and that he was connected to Russia. Those are the things.
Now.
No, she doesn't have anything. She's still running those hits, right?
Right, but what are the hits? I guess I don't know what, because Russiagate, the fact that she's even allowed to be on the air.
After Russiagate, right.
After Russiagate, which she pushed every day on her freaking show.
For 4 years. Every day I was waiting for Trump to get arrested for what she was
like, it's
hysterical about every day.
Remember that day she held up a piece of paper and she's like, I've got the paper.
It was his tax return.
She's like, today's the day.
Yeah.
But anyway, today, what I'm talking about is now. Like, what now do they have? When they want to call Trump extreme, what specifically are they citing? They have nothing. They can't point to anything. Oh,
well, they're hanging their hat on January 6th. So I listened to a couple episodes of Pod Save America this week because I want to know how the liberal media is covering this. And they say that, you know, Vivek Ramaswamy and Nikki Haley, I don't know if Nikki Haley says this, but because they say that there's some fishy stuff about January 6th, that makes them extremists. You have to just take January 6th as a spoonful of medicine, that it was only bad people in a bad insurrection. None of them were provoked, that it was completely an attempt to overturn our democracy.
You have to cry like an MSNBC anchor
right.
who's just so upset about it.
Yeah.
You have to put
lack curiosity on why some of the tapes don't support that. You have to lack curiosity on why some people who were even journalists, like Brandon Straka, were arrested for not doing anything, why prosecutions are so uneven. You can't say anything like that. And so that's sort of what they're saying, is that Trump's an extremist because of January 6th, even though he's not been convicted of anything because in connection with that.
Or if you don't want trans ideology pushed on your children in schools, right? You don't want.
That's not necessarily a Trump platform at this moment.
Well, he's absolute. I mean, he's spoken out against this type of thing in our schools. He's certainly spoken out against getting, he did a whole speech about 8 months ago where he released it on Truth Social or wherever it was at the time. And he specifically talked about not allowing the government to push these, trans surgeries and body mutilation of children. That's extreme. Like stopping our children from having their bodies mutilated by that kind of. So maybe that's the extremism she's talking about. And closing our southern border is extreme.
Now, I would like to have a little conversation with the chat, because with you in the comments, I find it so interesting that when I see things like this, I think to myself, if these were my colleagues, and, you know, they're at least my contemporaries, I would say you should apologize for what you did during COVID. You should apologize for what you did during Russiagate. You should apologize for how you unevenly cover these politicians, one political party over another. Every time I say that, we get so many comments that say, no apology. We don't accept that. No apology. They should go to jail. And I'm so interested in whether or not there's any redemption for people like this, who once they just read a few books or open up their curiosity cells of their brain, is there any redemption or just no? What do you think?
Well, I think that's a good question. I mean, if they're just a casual person on the street who, you know, changed their opinion because they got educated and they were awakened and they learned about something that's different. But if you're Rachel Maddow, who every day was driving a certain narrative and encouraging you to go, and she was calling you stupid for not getting a vaccine. She was, you know, they were pushing this narrative. They had doctors on their shows. They had Fauci on their show every day pushing a certain narrative.
Yeah.
And now we know the effects of it and how detrimental it's been. Why is Dr. Fauci able to go to Washington Nationals games? Why isn't he locked up? Why isn't he behind bars at this point?
Yeah.
So if Fauci just comes out and says, I'm sorry.
Right.
You know, and how many millions of people died as a result of that? You know, it's like if Hitler came out and apologized.
Yes, but I was uppity sort of like this at one point, too. I was a useful idiot for a while, so I can say I'm sorry.
Yeah, but,
right?
but I never told anyone
how to live.
Exactly. That's the difference. You can have different opinions and learn something. I'm talking about Rachel Maddow or these other people who were pushing things like Dr. What's his name from Pfizer, who was on CNBC all the
Albert
damn time.
Albert Bourla.
Scott Gottlieb. These guys were telling parents to go out and do this on a regular basis, to go out and get triple boosted, quadruple boosted. So if they just come out and say, I'm sorry, but it'd be interesting to hear members of parliament or members of government or the United States Congress. I think we did have, Philip, correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't we have wasn't there like one member of like the, I don't know, Irish Parliament or somebody that came out and apologized? It was like the first and only person to apologize for anything.
And Vivek Ramaswamy has said, I wish I had done things differently as well. I wish I hadn't taken the COVID vaccine.
But that's his personal choice to have done that,
right?
I'm talking about things that someone has done that's killed people or hurt people. Anyway. We're off on a tangent.
We are, because I'm so curious when I get these comments in YouTube say no apology. And I kind of chuckle to myself, but I want you to know that I read them. I think it's so interesting when she's talking about this hypothetical authoritarian leader that she lacks understanding of the fact that we have one right now. The Biden administration censored speech online. It's taking it to the Supreme Court so they can keep doing it about the pandemic. They prosecute political opponents the way Rachel Maddow told me that Trump did for years.
Told all of us.
Yeah. I feel like she said it to me. I'm very personally offended by Rachel Maddow. He protects his family from due process and currently is under impeachment proceedings for foreign interference peddling. Any of this done by Trump would send MSNBC ablaze. But they're more worried about Trump, and that's very disingenuous. Maybe they're really concerned about Trump is just I don't know. He needs to apologize. I don't know what they want from him, right? To apologize and mea culpa. Here is a political pundit on GB News saying that the people who vote for Trump don't even believe in reality. They're just off on another planet. She says they're not on Earth One. They're so stupid.
I think if America goes into autocracy, that's not just bad for Democrats. That's bad for Britain. That's bad for the United States. That's bad for Mexico and Canada and everyone else. So I think we should all be really worried. I think Trump has this nomination locked up. I don't think it's even going to be a contest. You know, I think if Nikki Haley had come in first or even second, she might have had a chance. But fundamentally, the math is not mathing, right? There's no, Trump is not going away. He has a base. It continues to shrink, but it is galvanized and it is passionate. And they believe in their guy, and they don't necessarily even believe in a lot of the realities that we on Earth One believe in.
What is the
reality?
That just reeks of Hillary Clinton saying basket of deplorables. Like, you, these people that voted for Trump are literally on a whole other planet. They operate in a whole other universe from us here in real Earth.
Right.
That's what that reads to me.
They don't believe in science. Clearly, they don't believe in January 6th.
They don't believe in Gay Pride Week.
Censorship. They don't believe in right. I don't know.
They don't believe a month long celebration of I don't know, whatever. I mean, whatever choice liberals have this month, that now it's trans month. Oh, they don't believe in that? They must live on a whole other planet.
Right. Different realities. Here is Joy Reid from MSNBC accusing Iowa of racism and sexism, saying that otherwise Nikki Haley would have won, but she had the deck stacked against her because she's a brown lady.
New Hampshire.
And I think to the point that you made, Steph, I mean, it's the elephant in the room. She's still a brown lady that's got to try to win in a party that is deeply anti-immigrant and which accepts the notion that you can say immigrants are poisoning the blood of our country. She's getting, you know, birthered by Donald Trump. And I don't care how much the donor class likes her, which will ramp up a lot, the better she does in New Hampshire. So it's still a challenge. I don't see how she becomes the nominee of that party with Donald Trump still around. I can't picture it happening. Maybe it could happen. Ron DeSantis' only argument for staying in it is he's the white guy, that he can still make the appeal to white people.
While we have,
that's interesting. What do black people have blonde hair?
No, I don't.
Why
know.
Why is she coloring her hair like a white person?
Cultural appropriation.
I'm just curious. That just struck me. Like, she's very much worried about the brownness of Nikki Haley, and yet she's coloring her hair blonde. I don't know. I'm just curious about that.
Well, she can color her hair any way she wants. It's the words that are repugnant that she's saying. Barack Obama won Iowa, so Iowa wasn't all that racist in 2008, right?
It's also ridiculous that she's saying that Donald Trump is birthering her. Where's your birth certificate, Nikki Haley? He doesn't have to really say anything about her at all. In fact, she's the one who shot herself in the foot with her affiliations. And of course, now all of these Democratic donors, the money that's poured in from Democratic donors for Nikki Haley,
right,
that people could see right through that in Iowa.
Well, I think we should have learned this from Hillary Clinton, and we should have learned this from Lloyd Austin, that when we celebrate someone's race and gender, we miss the glaring fact that they are warmongers. And, you know, we can argue about the fact that, oh, Hillary Clinton, it was sexism. Maybe it was for some people, but it wasn't part of the conversation how many people she had killed. Nikki Haley is a disingenuous warmonger who just happens to be a brown lady. So maybe what people had their pulse on that, their finger on the pulse of that.
Could be.
She kept going. She said that white Christians are really the problem. And it's a problem basically that they even vote. Watch this.
But, you know, I feel like the important sort of data point, and you know, Steve talks about it a lot. He's going to probably talk about it a little more tonight, is that these are white Christians. that this is a state that is overrepresented by white Christians that are going to participate in these caucuses, yes. Especially tonight. Earlier today, reached out to Robbie Jones, from the Public Religion Research Institute, knowing that we were going to talk about Iowa. And this is a hyper-evangelical white state. And he said the following to me. Iowa is about 61% white Christian. The country as a whole is approximately 41% white Christian. And in Iowa, we're talking about evangelical white Christians. And he said the following. Because I asked him, what do they get out of supporting Donald Trump? Because he keeps losing, he keeps delivering losses and losses and losses. And he said the following. They see themselves as the rightful inheritors of this country, and Trump has promised to give it back to them. All the things that we think about electability, about, you know, what are people gaming out, or none of that matters when you believe that God has given you this country, that it is yours, and that everyone who is not a white conservative Christian is a fraudulent American, is a less real American, then you don't care about electability. You care.
Okay, so they're only voting because they believe that they have rights as citizens. They believe the song, "This land is your land, this land is my land."
Right. No, white people are the problem in Iowa. And they are, as she pointed out, overrepresented. They are hyper-represented in Iowa.
Mm-hmm. And even though Trump keeps losing, what is it that he's been losing? Because I thought last night was a win.
Yeah. She's like, oh, yeah, he keeps losing his base. And Maddow said, yeah, his base is withering. Okay. Well,
even David Axelrod, Obama's campaign advisor last night, realized Trump is running a pretty tight ship. Even Pod Save America had admitted that he's running a really organized campaign. And they went to Eric Trump's speech and they're like, he gave a good speech. He really connects with people. What's going on here? And instead of saying, what have I missed over my last 8 years of being uppity and thinking I know everything, instead of saying that, they just continue to punch down and talk down to people. Watch how they think that they can change the reality by just not naming Donald Trump. Watch how Rachel Maddow, she doesn't even say his name like it's Voldemort, because she thinks she has the moral high ground, and they're telling us they won't show his victory speech.
Sure. I'm sorry, I just have to do a little bit of business just for a second. At this point in the evening, the projected winner of the Iowa caucuses has just started giving his victory speech. We will keep an eye on that as it happens. We will let you know if there's any news made in that speech, if there's anything noteworthy, something substantive and important. The reason I'm saying this is, of course, there is a reason that we and other news organizations have generally stopped giving an unfiltered live platform to remarks by former President Trump. It is not out of spite. It is not a decision that we relish. It is a decision that regularly revisit. And honestly, earnestly, it is not an easy decision. But there is a cost to us as a news organization of knowingly broadcasting untrue things. That is the fundamental truth of our business and who we are. And so his remarks tonight will not air here live. We will monitor them and let you know about any news that he makes.
So Russiagate? That makes me want to punch the screen, that we can't air lies. Joe Biden can say them with impunity. How many times did you say that the Hunter Biden story was not legitimate?
Yeah.
How many times, right, did you say things about the COVID pandemic that were not true, allow Dr. Fauci unlimited airtime to tell untruths, and
push
this
Russiagate.
Situation...
And Russiagate every night on your
show. Yes, but since the war in Ukraine, right now, that's still going on, they say lies about the war. Right now, still. And so she's saying it's unconscionable for us because too often he lies. We'll watch the speech, they say. And if he says anything we think you should know, so we will be the arbiters. We will be the middleman, right? And then if he says anything we want you to hear from that, we will tell you that. But otherwise, we don't want you to hear it.
Right, but they can air President Biden's speeches where he says the greatest threat to the United States of America are MAGA white extremists. Never mind the fact that We have rampant drugs pouring across our border and fentanyl crisis. You see the videos of people laying on the streets of Philadelphia or all over California, or thousands of people pouring across the border into the United States. But the greatest threat to America, MAGA white extremists, they can let that play on MSNBC without a problem at all.
Right. Lie after lie after lie. I mean, if you did a shot every time they told a lie about the war in Ukraine, right, you'd be dead by now. Right. I don't think any journalism school worth its salt would say, yeah, that was a good call. You can't give Trump, you know, airtime because he's a liar.
And she says, I for one am
relieved to know that the media is stepping up to just to consume all of the information and then just give me what I need to know.
Yes.
Because, yeah. I want it filtered through Rachel Maddow for sure.
But see, I guess I look at this, I'm a glass half full kind of guy. You know, I'm a positive person. Mm. Does that bother you?
No, I'm just give you a fake smile.
So what I think about this is, well, we don't need them. Who's watching MSNBC anyway? And so if MSNBC is like, you know, we've decided here at MSNBC that we're not going to air a Trump speech. He's like, well, here's a big middle finger. I'm going to go over to X, or formerly Twitter, and we're going to stream our acceptance speech here in Iowa, or our victory speech here in Iowa. And tens of millions of people are going to watch it. More people are watching Bluey on PBS right now than are watching Rachel Maddow on MSNBC. So this is the death of mainstream media. Jake Tapper, CNN, did the same exact thing.
Yes, they did.
So they're not off the hook either. Who's watching these networks? No one is watching them anymore.
And what they did instead was play Nikki Haley's second place speech. They chose not to play Vivek Ramaswamy's concession speech, where he decided to drop out of the race, probably because he endorsed and was favorable to Trump.
As I've said since the beginning, there are two America First candidates in this race. And earlier tonight, I called Donald Trump to tell him that I congratulated him on his victory. And now going forward, he will have my full endorsement for the presidency. And I think we're going to do the right thing for this country.
Now,
and then, by the way, Trump came out later and specifically went out of his way to thank Vivek and said he ran a great campaign. And he went out of his way to point out Vivek's, did a really great job and has elevated the conversation.
Now, look, I'm not here to endorse Trump. I'm not here to endorse any candidate. That's not my place in your life as your local neighborhood journalist, right? Here I am telling you that the media is doing you wrong. This is not how it's taught in journalism school. This is not how it should be on any public broadcast. They should not be making these decisions, and they certainly should not be deciding which lies they think they need to blow up and which lies they decide to sweep under the rug and buy or sell you or anything like that. And I think in the wake of the 2016 election, a lot of the liberal media and you know, sort of East Coast media elites all looked at themselves and said, oh, we did this. We got Trump elected. It's because we gave them too much power, the Trump campaign, which is interesting because they already were giving themselves credit as if they can only let people through, right? So they're just lack self-awareness about the fact that like, oh, well, this time we're going to get it right. This time we won't give him airtime. This time we're going to suppress him. It's no wonder that people hate them, right? I find this odious. As someone who still believes in journalism, until they apologize for all the lies that they continue to tell, we can't let them censor truth. I want to never hear from these people again.
That's a good way to end this. I never want to hear from these people again. Yes. Why are we allowing Rachel Maddow to have television time at all? It's utterly ridiculous. We have more news to get to here on your Tuesday. Want to point out to you, though, that we have we'd love for you to subscribe to the show because we are live every day at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So please subscribe. Be a part of our great community here. And when you do, we will share your name here on the show. So please subscribe. We've got more news to get to here on your Tuesday. Yeah, just subscribe right there on YouTube and on Rumble. We're live streaming on Rumble right now. We've got over 20,000 of you watching on Rumble, 22,000 of you watching here on YouTube. So thank you, as always. We're also stream on X every night as well. I'm a former Fox News anchor, and Natalie's a former former CBS News reporter and anchor and writer. Yes, we are married.
I also was on CNBC and MSNBC, so... Yeah.
You're like Tucker. Tucker was on CNN.
Right. I made the rounds.
MSNBC. Tucker was on MSNBC.
Yeah.
CNN.
We were in the belly of the beast for the mainstream media.
That's true. We've been on the air so long that our big screen went out. We'll get to that in a second. But first we want to tell you about our next sponsor here. Yes, we want to tell you about our good friends over at TWC Health. As we know, the government's goal is dependency and control of our lives. Close to 90% of pharmaceuticals in the United States are produced outside of the United States. So what happens when the next global crisis strikes? What happens when China decides that America shouldn't get its shipments anymore? The price of medications rise and the pharmacy shelves in America are empty. But if not for the wellness company, they can do something about it. They want you to be prepared. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit holds 8 life-saving medications that every American should keep in their medicine cabinets, like having a doctor at home in case you need it, okay? The kit contains antibiotics, antivirals, antiparasitics, meds like amoxicillin, Z-Pak, plus a 22-page guidebook with instructions on safe usage. From tick bites to COVID to extreme bioterror events, every scenario is covered. These prescription emergency kits are in huge demand right now, and they are allowing you to save 10% off just by having it in your house if you need it. Head to twc.health/redacted, okay? I'll read that URL one more time. It's twc.health/redacted, twc.health/redacted. Grab yours before they're gone. Get 10% off at checkout. Be safe, be prepared, and stay well. The kits are only available in the United States of America. One more time, twc.health/redacted. Well, free speech is the hallmark of any democracy. Ireland, though, is looking to end free speech with a new hate speech bill, which would, among other things, potentially get you arrested if you're caught with a meme or a cartoon, or any content that the government deems it rises to the level of being hate speech. And actually, they haven't really even defined what that means, so we don't even know. But my wife sends me memes all the time. I guess if I'm an Irish citizen, I, of course, could then be potentially arrested under this law that's deemed hateful by the Irish government. Elon Musk said this yesterday about Ireland's law and posted this on X: destroying freedom of speech means destroying democracy. Here's a group that released this new ad and this new video speaking out against this bill. Take a look.
The Irish government is proposing a law known as the Hate Speech Bill that threatens free speech. This law could have dire consequences for our democracy.
Next month, and then
this law will have uncertain effects on artistic and musical expression.
Please support us.
It could stifle the activity of public campaigning on political and civil issues, and also curtail speech relating to topics about religion, ethnicity, sex, and gender.
Well, David Thunder is Irish. That's not all he has going for him. He's very, very smart as well. He's a researcher, a lecturer in political philosophy, and he joins me now from Ireland. David, welcome back to the show. Is Ireland a democracy any longer, or is it slipping away from democracy as we speak?
I would say that Ireland is, unfortunately, under the current government, is slipping towards what I would call an oligarchy, or rule by elite rather than rule by the people. The current government seems to be completely out of touch with what people want, what their interests are. And this hate speech bill is a perfect example, because there was no popular demand for this radical and draconian piece of legislation. The government just decided to just push it through in spite of the fact that the majority of submissions from the public were actually against the bill.
Why would they push this through? I mean, where is this coming from? So I'm always curious when suddenly we see this big push for legislation in a country and the Irish people are not asking for this. Where is it coming from? Have you been able to track this down?
Well, there are two places that it's coming from, in my opinion. One is from the European Union, because there's a 2008 Council framework decision on combating certain forms and expressions of racism and xenophobia by means of criminal law, which obligates member states to criminalize hate speech and also to criminalize the denial of genocide. So they're acting under this framework decision, which is binding upon member states. So that's the first thing. That particular framework decision did not obligate them to introduce the category of gender as a protected category. That's not coming from the European Union. And I would suggest that this redefinition of gender is coming from the trans lobby. It's clear that the government is responding more to lobbies than to popular demand. And we know this for a long time, that all governments operate under pressure from lobby groups. But the Irish government in particular, I'm at a loss to explain why they would radicalize the definition of gender unless it's under the influence of trans lobbies.
Is the trans lobby so massive? I mean, who's financial? I always want to know where the money is, right? Who's financially supporting this massive trans lobby, so much so that they're creating legislation that would have you arrested if you have some sort of meme or cartoon on your phone that would rise to the level that would really upset this trans group? Like, where is this money coming from?
Well, that's a great question. My understanding is that these self-styled progressive groups, I consider them regressive, mm-hmm. but they would self present as progressive, are from the government. They actually receive money, funds, grants from the Irish government. The Irish government gives millions and millions every year to NGOs, including progressive NGOs. And also there are very large international foundations like the George Soros. I understand the Soros Foundation helps to fund some of these kind of progressive lobby groups and NGOs. So probably if you did a paper trail, you'd probably find money coming from very interesting sources.
I swear to God, every time I ask that question, I'm never surprised to hear George Soros' name pop up on a regular basis with these groups. And these, anytime you see these organized protests, you see these groups showing up on Capitol steps and they're moving towards this, George Soros' name is always somehow tied to it. I'm curious, though, the other side of this. We showed you a video here, which Elon Musk retweeted yesterday or reposted yesterday. It's what we just showed you here on the show. I'm kind of stunned that there seems to be some sort of an effort. I don't know if it's grassroots or not, but to try to put a stop to this in Ireland. What do you make of the resistance group or the resistance movement there in Ireland against this?
Well, I think that it's genuinely grassroots in the sense that I don't think that there's like massive money coming in from the United States to support the cause of speech. And certainly I don't think the government is actively funding, you know, pro-free speech groups. So my sense is that it's a genuinely, very authentically grassroots, doesn't have any members. And I think they're making a disproportionate impact compared with their actual size. And I've cooperated with them in some capacity in the past. And there are a number of members of the parliament and of the Senate who have come out strongly against this legislation. So it's very much a minority, let's say, a minority report, if you will, among the more influential actors. It's a minority who are coming out against this. But the thing is, I think that the argument, the case against this hate speech legislation is so powerful at a common sense level that I actually think that in a way it should resonate with a lot of people of goodwill. Because, I mean, who wants to have their home raided because they have an article sitting on their hard drive that somebody thinks could offend somebody out there? I mean, it's so obviously wrong and so illiberal and regressive to allow the police to get a warrant to raid your property because of something you haven't even published.
Right, right. It's unbelievable. You brought up a key element of this, and I'm sorry if I sort of maybe buried the lead on this, but I would love for you to, can you explain to our audience exactly what this hate speech bill does? And was I being hyperbolic when I said, you know, if you had a meme on your phone, or you had a meme on your hard drive, or a cartoon, or you had something that's on your hard drive that the government didn't like, they could come into your house and they could actually arrest you. Am I being hyperbolic there?
I don't think you're being hyperbolic, but I think you just have to nuance it slightly, because the legislation in question does require that they show recklessness or intentionality. So in other words, when you, for example, send a meme, it's not enough that you sent a meme and it sparked hatred. Another condition is that, you know, that you could have reasonably foreseen that this meme would spark hatred. And I guess that there is some sense of recklessness in sending out that meme. I'm not happy with that nuance. I don't think that covers our freedom, because I think we should be perfectly within our rights to send out a meme. And I think we should be perfectly in our rights to use hard-hitting discourse. And I think this is really at the heart of this legislation. And this is the real problem with this legislation, is that it undermines the possibility of vibrant and hard-hitting democratic discourse. There will be some citizens, namely the citizens who happen to have the wrong positions, the positions that are not looked upon favorably by the powers that be or the government, who will be potentially prosecuted for their speech. And other citizens, for example, citizens who support trans rights, or citizens who are all gung-ho for open borders and free immigration, who will not be affected by this. So it's a fundamentally unequal piece of legislation. It goes after people for their political opinions, and the effect it has is that it selectively silences some citizens over others because of the way these protected categories are crafted. And the main innovation in this latest iteration, because we already have hate speech legislation, unfortunately, on the books in Ireland, is that it adds gender and disability to the protected characteristics. So clearly, that's why I'm saying that there is very likely the influence of a transgender lobby in crafting this legislation. Because the way they define gender, by the way, is crazy, because gender is whatever you identify with, and it could be male or female or something else. So it's a totally open-ended definition. And it could mean, I mean, who knows? I identify gender X, and right, Nobody knows quite what that is, but that's what I identify with. So now that's protected, right? So it's a very strange, legally speaking, it's a very strange piece of legislation.
Well, we hope there's enough grassroots support. There's enough members of the government that are going to stand up and say no to this. But as you pointed out, this is going to be debated in the Senate. There's no real timetable on this yet, but it's moving through the government as we speak, is it not?
That's right. And if the government gets its way, it'll be passed within a few months. The best case scenario is that some of the more egregious parts of the legislation might be modified or might be softened. You know, I'm not too optimistic about getting this off the books completely. It's already on a lot of the elements of this legislation are already on the books. That's important to point out, such as being able to raid your property for unpublished material. That's already on our statute books. They want to make it easier to prosecute those kinds of crimes, what they call crimes. So it's very worrying. And the one bright light sort of in the middle of all of this for me is that it has sensitized people. A lot of people have become aware that their liberties are in jeopardy. And citizens need to wake up. They need to realize that the people who are governing us don't care about us. They don't care about our freedom. And they're more interested in cozying it up to the European Union and their colleagues there, or the lobby groups, or what have you, than actually just catering to the normal, ordinary, everyday interests of citizens. And that's a good wake-up call for people, you know, to get off their sofa and, you know, get engaged.
Well said. Well said. Hopefully people are waking up, but it's not just enough to wake up. It's time to take action. Organize protests. Call your government officials and let them know that you do not stand for this. And there's power in organizing, as Germany is currently experiencing right now, and as France is currently experiencing right now. So Europe better pay attention, because something big is happening in Europe. David Thunder is in Ireland. We really appreciate it, and we'll be watching this very closely. David, where can people find you?
Well, they could find me on my blog on Substack, which is davidthunder.substack.com. And they can also find me on Twitter at David J. Thunder.
Very smart man. I encourage all of you to go out and follow David. We really appreciate your insights on this. And thank you for standing for free speech, David. Great to see you today.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Thanks, David.
Well, Rox in the chat says it's worse than Scotland now, but you have to remember that Ireland started a lot of this crazy gender ideology started in Ireland first and bled over. It's almost like a globalist test bed. We spoke about that with Ivor Cummings when he was on the show recently, also an Irish political analyst. So it's worth watching. And in Helen Joyce's excellent book, she talks about how lobbyists want to accomplish these things. Trans rights activists, they specifically say, keep this out of the media until we can just sort of slip it under. And then people will not know where it came from. That's exactly what happened in Ireland, that they changed the gender ID law and tried to keep it out of the media. Because most people would say, no, I don't want a guy to self-ID into my kid's locker room, into my daughter's locker rooms, right? They are pretty common sense about it, but it became law because they weren't watching. So now it's time to watch.
Yeah, I'm glad that there's a grassroots effort there in Ireland. Let us know if you're watching us from Ireland tonight and what you think about this hate speech bill. And it's not just about Ireland. It's about Europe and it's about North America as well, as you see what's happening in Canada and the trickle-down effect into the United States. So this is all very real, and it's certainly happening at the government level and social media censorship, something Michael Schellenberger has been speaking out about quite extensively lately. So we've got more news to get to here. Will China go to war with Taiwan over their latest election? Well, the Western media would have you believe that's the case. And so are we gearing up for war with China over potentially a false flag related to Taiwan? Don't fall for it. We're on false flag alert watch tonight. Here, we're going to talk about the China connection here in just a moment. But first, I don't know if you've been paying attention. Gold prices have been surging, all-time highs. So too has silver nearing really fantastic highs, not their record high, which is in the 40s dollars, but doing really, really well. But gold has, and central banks have been buying up gold left and right. The U.S. government, $34 trillion in debt. And over the past 48 hours, we saw a number of major tech companies laying off thousands of Americans. So what exactly is going on right now? Wall Street seems like it's kind of happy, but it's kind of hard to tell. But are you and your family safe right now with the U.S. dollar facing this volatility index that we've never seen before? That's why we're big proponents of investing at least a portion of your savings into precious metals. That's something that Natalie and I do on a regular basis. Once a month, we analyze, okay, do we want to buy more silver? Do we want to buy more gold? Buying metals that have sustained for 5,000 years through famines, through wars, through the collapse of governments. Every government currency in world history has collapsed. Every one of them. So, and gold has sustained it for thousands of years. So why in the world would you think the U.S. dollar is going to be the one that will stick it to the man and will be the only one that doesn't collapse? I don't buy that for a second. History repeats itself. So to have a portion of your savings to protect your family in precious metals and, frankly, in hard assets like real estate and other commodities, big proponents of that. Our friends at Lear Capital can help you get set up with that. And you can give them a phone call, 1-800-613-3557, to get your free investor guide. They'll just give you a free guide on gold and silver and see if it's a fit for you. And they'd love to talk with you on the phone. They're great people over there at Lear. Tell them that Redacted sent you over there. And just to see if it's a fit, you can buy precious metals, have it sent right to your house or stored in a safe location so that it's protected by 24/7 by guards. And if you don't want to keep it in your house and you're safe, you can do that. Owning gold, owning precious metals. And what's great about that, owning it offsite like that, is you can, you know, you really can convert it and sell it in like 3 days if you need to. Like, oh, you're saving up to buy a house or whatever. You can just sell it within a few days very, very quickly if you keep it that way. It takes a few more days, like if you keep it stored in your house, right? You have to go to a gold broker and sell it, but it's not a big deal. It's the safety that we're talking about here. So go to LearRedacted.com. That's the website we've set up as well, where you can get $15,000 in free bonus medals with a qualified purchase. Just have a conversation with them and see if it's a fit for you. Big fans of Lear. They've been in business for over 30 years, thousands of five-star reviews. And they're fantastic people over there. Again, go to LearRedacted.com or call their 800 number, 1-800-613-3557.
Taiwan has elected a new president. He is President Lai Ching-te from the Democratic Progressive Party. The U.S. says this means that Taiwan must want their independence. But is that true? Joining me to discuss is Carl Zha. He comes to us from Bali. He is an expert on Asian politics and host of the Silk and Steel podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. So can you give me a summary of what this means and what this party stands for?
I think there's a little bit of a lag, but I think I catch most of what you said, Natalie. So I'll give my take. Right now in Taiwan, the election just completed. The current ruling party, DPP, won the third term. The DPP candidate won about 40% of the vote. Not a really overwhelming popular mandate, because 60% of the voter actually voted for the opposition party candidates. But the problem was that opposition was divided. So it was a three-way election, and the 60% of the voters was split between 30% voted for KMT candidate, the main opposition party, and the 26% voted for the third, the People's Party, which is the new party that emerged out of this election. So the ruling party, DPP, actually hasn't been very popular because of COVID policies and because Taiwan's flagging economy. Just for little background information for the users who may not be conversant in Taiwan politics, Taiwan has been running a basically two-party platform for a good 30 years. It alternated between the DPP, Democratic Progressive Party, and the KMT, Kuomintang, or the Chinese Nationalist Party. And the KMT party, they originally came from mainland China after 1949, after the Chinese Civil War, the communists won the victory. The Governing Party of China, the Chinese Nationalist Party, aka KMT, they left mainland China, they went to Taiwan, and they ruled Taiwan as a military dictatorship with U.S. support for until 1990. In 1996, that's when Taiwan held its first presidential election to all parties. And that's when the opposition to DPP during the 60s, 70s, 80s, during the period of dictatorship, that gave the rise to the DPP party. The DPP party platform is Taiwan independence.
Okay, so if I were to boil this down, I would say that DPP is actually the platform of Taiwanese independence, but that is not the appetite of the entire Taiwanese population, as the media might have us understand. Is that correct?
That's correct, because the DPP, they came out the party platform of Taiwan independence because they feel the KMT is an outsider party that came from mainland China that took over Taiwan. They took over the governance of Taiwan. They felt this is a mainlander's party. So they advocate a completely disassociation from China in order to kind of overthrow the KMT rule. So they kind of have this legacy platform for Taiwan independence. But when DPP finally won presidential election and a DPP presidential candidate got elected, things got interesting because instead of declaring independence as a party platform proclaimed, they kind of backtracked because they said, well, we don't have to declare independence because the Republic of China on Taiwan is already an independent entity. So we don't need to declare of Taiwan, which was written in their platform. So that is for the past two terms of DPP presidency. The DPP won the election for the last two election cycles, but they did not declare independence because they say, well, we don't need to declare independence. The Republic of China, quote unquote, on Taiwan is already independent. And the current DPP candidate that won the election, who was a VP of the previous administration, also reiterated the stand. So essentially, there's not much difference between the DPP party and the KMT party when it comes down to declaring Taiwan independence. Both parties are essentially status quo parties. They want to maintain the status quo, which is Taiwan de facto separate from mainland China, but they don't want to declare Taiwan independence outright because that would potentially provoke a war, because the Chinese government in Beijing has repeatedly said they would not tolerate Taiwan independence. So, which really means this larger scheme of things means just the same old continuation of the last 10 years. There will be continued tensions with mainland China. Beijing government obviously doesn't like the fact that DPP party, which is openly hostile to mainland China, going to continue another term. But at the same time, the equation hasn't changed drastically. And again, the in Taiwan, they hold the presidential election together with a parliamentary election. And DPP actually lost their majority in the parliamentary election. So right now, KMT, the opposition, hold more seats than DPP in the Taiwan legislature. So the new DPP president who is coming in is going to face a hostile legislature. You know, he's probably going to be a lame duck president for his four-year term. And let's face it, Taiwan is a case where it doesn't matter which ruling party is ruling the island. They all have to answer to, anything they do in Taiwan, like a big step, like hold a referendum on Taiwan independence, for example, they would not do it without explicit approval, backing, and encouragement of Washington. And at this current juncture, Washington is embroiled in a multi-front war already. The United States involving a proxy war against Russia in Ukraine. And they also is involved in supporting by backing Israel over the Palestine conflict. U.S. is getting dragged back into Middle East. U.S. just bombed Yemen. So all the U.S. aircraft carriers, battle groups are currently in the Red Sea, in the Arabian Gulf, in Mediterranean. There's not much spare manpower or military asset to be redeployed to Western Pacific. And you know, last thing United States or Joe Biden wants to see is to open a server front war with China. So we're looking at a continuation of tensions across the Taiwan Strait, but not much has changed the current election result.
If you read the Western press and their coverage of this, they are presenting China as this really pissed off entity, this bad actor, aggressive, bad guy. And yet they allow this to go forward. They allowed the election to happen. And so what do you think is the real appetite of China for war? And how do they perceive this? They've said that it's a domestic affair, which Taiwan says is disrespectful. And so what is really the appetite of any kind of aggression for Taiwan?
So first of all, United States has a one China policy, and United States doesn't even have an official relationship with the government on Taiwan. Like, United States do not officially recognize the government on Taiwan. In 1979, as part of normalization of relationship between China and United States, Jimmy Carter actually read out what U.S. one China policy is. He's publicly stated there's only one China and Taiwan is part of China. And we only recognize the legitimate government of China as the government in Beijing. So that's a pretty explicit statement. And Joe Biden has recently reiterated that U.S. position on Taiwan has not changed during his summit with President Xi Jinping in San Francisco. So, you know, none of the major Western government recognize Taiwan as a separate state apart from China. Again, this is where the Western press, they kind of play a game, playing on the ignorance of their readership that they would not know the official position of their government. And again, China's position has always been that sovereignty is not a negotiable, and they always the last Xi Jinping gave that is that he is committed to the peaceful reunification with Taiwan. You know, the key word is peaceful. And of course, China does not renounce any options to reunify with Taiwan, including with force, but they have always emphasized what they want is peaceful reunification. Now, China obviously not happy with the current election result. They would much rather have a more friendly KMT party in power. The last time a KMT president was ruling over Taiwan, they had worked out many trade deals. They finally opened up direct linkage between, say, you know, allow Taiwan businessmen, for example, to fly directly from Taiwan to China. Now, this particular juncture, that it just means the continuation of the past 8 years of the DPP presidency, where the administration on Taiwan will cling even more tighter to the U.S. ties, basically signing on the U.S. containment strategy versus China. But Taiwan government really don't have much to say on this. You know, for example, Taiwan's economy is struggling right now because the U.S. tech sanction against China, which means the Taiwan's main economic powerhouse, Taiwan Semiconductors, TSMC, is not allowed to sell to its main customer, tech companies in mainland China like Huawei. And so they're losing a lot of their market. They have to, they've gone through multiple rounds of layoffs, and that's affecting the Taiwan economy. That's something that there's nothing Taiwan government could do because they have to comply with the U.S. sanction. Fundamentally, the Taiwan issue is not a Taiwan local issue. The Taiwan issue is an issue between China and United States. And right now, U.S. is preoccupied elsewhere in Ukraine and the Middle East. It probably does not want to antagonize China further by stirring trouble in Taiwan Strait. On the other hand, China's primary focus is still domestic development, as it has been for the last 40 years. And the war obviously would destroy all that. So China has no incentive to start a war over Taiwan right now, especially when China is still growing. The China's relative strength is still growing versus United States year by year, month by month. So 5 years from now, 10 years from now, China will be even stronger versus United States. There's no time is on China's side. There's no reason for China to rush this issue today when you can wait 10, 15 years when China will be much, much stronger than today. So there is no, unfortunately, for a lot of the news organization around the world, there won't be a big news. There won't be a war. There won't be like flashy headlines. The reality is quite boring. China will continue to rise in the background. They will not make any risky moves over Taiwan. Meanwhile, the Taiwan government, no matter DPP or KMT, they'll probably also not risk a war by unilaterally declaring independence, which means we're going to see the status quo over Taiwan Strait for the foreseeable future, for next 5 years at least.
Well, I would love a quite boring foreign policy, which is just keep your eyes on your own paper, stay out of foreign wars, and continue to grow your own economy and your own nation stronger every day. That's amazing. Thank you, as always, Carl Jha, for joining us. You can find him at the Silk and Steel podcast, also on X. It was once Real Carl Jha, because I think you got hacked or something, and then now it's just Carl Jha, right?
Just Carl Jha. Just Carl.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you again, as always, for joining us on Redacted. I look forward to speaking to you again,
Natalie,
another time.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, that's going to do it for us today at Redacted. Thank you so much for joining us, either live or later. Doesn't matter to us. We appreciate your conversation, your comments, your likes, your shares, all of the above. Hey, check out what else we have for you in addition to the streaming show at redacted.inc. We have a newsletter. We have a Plus Club. You get extra stuff on our Plus Club, like a book club and other discussions. We really appreciate your patronage there. So check it out at redacted.inc. We will be live again tomorrow. Remember, we're here every Monday through Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern. The newsletter comes out in the morning before that. So thank you again for being here. We appreciate you. See you tomorrow.